the purpose is to understand the behavior of certain extended low energy excitations in this theory. So this is a theory that consists of a gauge field in the joint of some Lie group, say, for this talk, SUN, and of a Majorana fermion, say, described by a H component spinner and a compact conjugate, which also live in the joint of the gauge group. So this is sort of a strange variation of QCD, where you take the quarks and you replace them with some fermions which carry the same color charges as the gluons. And indeed, the similarity extends to the fact that this is supposed to also confine at low energy, like QCD, and also has something that is similar to Carra symmetry breaking. So in a sense, this is a toy model for some rather interesting theories. But because it has supersymmetry, it's somewhat more tractable. So, that's right. So, the Lagrangian for this theory is just the standard minimally coupled thing you can write. You can toy in a theta angle. And kinetic time with the covariant derivative, which acts as it should on a field that lives in the joint, something like that. Okay, this talk no factors of I to pi, and you know, anyway, no factors would be important. As I'm saying, so this theory, this Lagrangian has a supersymmetry, which means that, which is a fermionic symmetry, which mixes together the gauge, the gluon and the gauge, you know. So essentially, the field strength changes roughly by the gauge, you know. The gauge, you know, changes by the field strength. Sorry, yeah, I meant to have some gamma matrices. Maybe sigma. Okay. So, but anyways, this degrees of freedom are good to describe the theory in the ultraviolet, because this is an asymptotically free theory. But they're not very useful to describe anything that's going on in the infrared. So this theory is supposed to confine, which means that at low energy, you don't see any colored object. You only see some massive glue balls which scatter, which move around. And in the large end, they are very quickly coupled. And the only effect of any supersymmetry from that point of view is that these glue balls will come in multiplets of fermionic and bosonic states with the same mass.
If lambda is not
younger patient, do we say that the actual group is from TSUN? No, the gauge group is still, there is SUN, the gauge symmetry is the bosonic SUN.
But can you restrict?
Ah, no, you mean, sorry, the P. Yeah. Sorry, I misunderstood. No, the gauge group is SUN. You could also study the PSUN gauge theory. From the point of view of the dynamics, it doesn't make a difference, you know. You're in your lab, you scatter some glue balls, you don't see any differences. But if you put the theory on a manifold, it makes a difference. And also, it changes the topological properties at low energy. So with this gauge group, the vacuum of the theory is going to be really boring. But if you use PSUN, then you, in some of the vacuum, you actually find some ZN gauge theory. I will probably try to discuss it. Yes, that's right. So the only difference in specifying which gauge group are you using is when you put the theory in a manifold, or which line defects do you allow yourself to use. So if it's an SUN gauge theory, you can study correlation functions with Wilson loop. in the fundamental representation. If it's PSUN, you cannot, but you can study a tooth loop of minimal charge. So they said this theory has two features in common with QCD. One is confinement, but the other is a sort of Carrasse symmetry breaking. So what I mean with that is that naively, classically, this theory, this Lagrangian, has a U1 symmetry rotating the gauge genome. It's called an R symmetry usually. So classically, you can take your lambda and rotate it. But this symmetry is broken by anomalies. So the measure of the path integral is just not invariant under this transformation unless you accompany it by a shift of the theta angle. Because the theta angle is periodic, you can still salvage a discrete subgroup of this symmetry. So quantum mechanically, there is a Z to N flavor symmetry, which rotates the gauge genome by I pi over N I pi over N. So now what is believed happens in this theory is that at low energy, the gauge genome condenses. So if you define an operator trace of lambda trans lambda squared, come with S, maybe I should just write it this, okay? Then it's believed that S gets a VEV. Now, the VEV is controlled by the strong coupling scale, which you get by dimensional transmutation from the gauge coupling. So if you define some scale roughly like this, okay, again, factors are flying here. Then, by dimensional reason, you expect something like this. But because this is the nth root of this quantity. So what really happens, so this breaks the Z2N symmetry spontaneously to Z2. So you actually end up with 2N vacuum. Okay. So supersymmetric. Yes, so this index is a two-component spinner. Yes. No, that's right. So there is lambda, and then there is a complex conjugate. So essentially, for supersymmetry, you want fermions and bosons, physical case of freedom for fermions and bosons to match. So the gluon has two helicities, and you want the fermion with two helicities. Well, that's right. Because it's in the joint, it's a real representation. Yes, you will need equal numbers of fundamentals and anti-fundamentals for things to work. Yes, the joint is fine, but you still had the anomaly in the mixed anomaly. Okay. So this is more or less what is known about the vacuum, the low energy behavior of this theory. So there are n vacua with a different phase for the gauge genome condensate. The theory in each of these vacua is massive, presumably has no interesting topological features, at least for SUN gauge group. I don't know if it could be symmetry protected for the Z2, but I don't think so. But I don't know for sure.
You already said that the U1 symmetry is anomalous. Mm-hmm. So as quantum theory, you actually have this Z2N symmetry.
That's right.
They all say this condensation would break Z2N
to Z2.
To Z2. Oh, I see.
Because the gauge genome condensate is bilinear in the lambda. So all the bosonic, Z2N, but The bosonic operator is only Czn. So the condensation only breaks the Czn. Now, so as I said, this theory has some massive globals. It has some confining strings, which are some strings with a specific tension, which you find every time you put a Wilson loop in your theory, or you know, a quark. But I'm not gonna care about those at all. Now, what I care about is that this theory has some domain walls between these vacua. So here's, and it's true of this vacua, you can imagine having a domain wall between them. This is a dynamical excitation of your theory. Okay. Yes? No, no. So this is no supersymmetry was harmed in the this RG flow. The domain wall breaks some supersymmetry though, because the supersymmetry algebra, so the supersymmetry is anticommute to translations. If you put something that breaks translations, you better break some supersymmetries. Because you preserve some translations, you can preserve some supersymmetries. The correct statement is you can preserve half of them. You started with four supersymmetries, maybe I should have said it. Which is the minimum in four dimensions. But the domain wall only preserves two supercharges. Which is the minimum in three dimensions.
So we know that this theory is free of a Euro perturbative anomaly. Mm-hmm. So the question of whether there's a potential global anomaly, or whether it's known whether this theory can be defined, have a regulation. Well, or this theory has to appear at the boundary or something. The reason I ask is because it's may, I wonder whether I went to the main wall or other things, whether how long.
I mean, I guess you might get a little worried about those Majorana and square Majorana fermions, right?
So whether we know anything about this, whether this. No, the field theory is fine, but whether the lack of regulation of this field theory, that's the question.
No, I wouldn't know how to, I'm not sure I would know how to regulate this theory.
I see.
The lattice should be.
Okay, yeah, I know, yes, yes, yes.
What I know is that, for example, if you put this theory in a torus, you get a theory which is, I think, fine, which is the CPN minus one sigma model. So at least I don't.
So there's no sign of trouble,
is it? I'm not aware of an obvious sign of trouble.
May I ask also, I wonder, you are saying that in low energy limit, S, expectation of S becomes non-zero.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't understand, I mean, why is it similar to creating group balls, for example?
No, it's not similar to creating group balls. Is a different confinement and symmetry breaking are different. I'm not so you could in principle have confinement without having a condensation of the fermions, or vice versa. They're not so if you have pure Yamil theory with no fermions, you'll have no condensate, but you'll have globals.
I mean, probably not globals, but is this similar to like quarks coupled to?
Well, the quarks form a condensate, right? In QCD. If you take the quarks psi psi diagonal, has a VEV in the vacuum.
So, this is it.
Right, so in the sense, it's analogous. Okay. So
you mean that non-zero condensate corresponds to somehow to creating nucleons from quarks?
I mean, so I should, yes. No, not quite. So, well, okay, imagine the quarks were had no bare masses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, so in that case, you would have some symmetry or chiral symmetry rotating left moving quarks and right moving quarks independently.
Mm-hmm.
And this is broken by the condensate of the quarks. Then the Gaussian bosons for this symmetry breaking are the pions. So the fact that we have pions in QCD, which are much lighter than the hadrons, is a manifestation of the fact that there is a symmetry breaking. But the existence of baryons has nothing to do with the symmetry breaking, I would say. I don't know if this helps at all.
You're saying the symmetry breaking is related to this expectation of S.
Yes. Yeah, it's very hard to the way people can prove that there is such an expectation value in the supersymmetric theory is that they look at the expectation value of S to the N, which we, and they, there is a one instanton calculation which sort of, I mean, you can see that this gets a, can get a verb in the background where it is one instanton for your gauge group. And then supersymmetry tells you that the wave of operators, of this sort of Carl operators, which are protected by supersymmetry, equals to the product of the wave. Okay. So see, the wave of S to the N is lambda to the 3N, which you can see can come from an instanton effect. The wave of S is much harder to understand directly. People wave hands about fractional instantons, but anyway. So I was saying that in the supersymmetric theory, you can sort of argue that you have this this fermions will get a web. And also, there are several ways to check it, either by, you know, compactifying the theory on a torus and seeing that you still get N vacua, or making brain models, which are sometimes trustworthy, sometimes not. I'll discuss it a bit later. Anyway, so back to the domain walls. So the domain wall breaks translation symmetry, so it always has a zero mode on the world volume, which is some boson which controls the normal fluctuations. Because this also breaks two supersymmetries, or this boson is accompanied by two fermions. Which are super partners of the boson. So these domain walls support a Majoran, a real fermion in three dimension and a boson, both massless, which have the small fluctuations of this domain wall. Again, this is pretty boring. I'm not gonna be very interested in this case of freedom. But what I find interesting is that there are some reasonable claims in the literature that these domain walls support also some extra topological degrees of freedom. So these are all the massless degrees of freedom. Besides this, there's supposed to be some topological degrees of freedom, which depend on K and K prime, on the choice of vacua, on the two sides of the domain wall.
But for these complex sectors, do they have this supersymmetry for the unbroken one, unbroken supersymmetry? You mean there's some supersymmetry unbroken? So
yes, so there are two unbroken supercharges, and this is sort of the minimal way to represent this. You know, the two supercharges act on X and give it a chi's. X on the casting u derivative of X.
Isn't the tension of this domain wall depends on the
The tension is known, that's right. The tension of this domain wall is the absolute value roughly of the difference between the Gaussian condensates. So it's something like absolute value of lambda cubed times the sine of pi K minus K prime over N. Yeah. So if you draw your vacua on a clock, okay, the tension of the domain wall is roughly the length of this segment. No, the mass has nothing to do with the tension of the wall. The tension of the wall is going to control the nonlinear effects. So when you write the Lagrangian for this massless mode, you're going to write some sort of a well, really, maybe a DBI number go anyway. There will be some, you know, the x squared, and then there will be higher order terms. I mean, so there will be a tension, of course, and then. but it does not control, I mean, these are not massless. No, not massive, they're massless modes. It just control the translations. They're Goldstone bosons or Goldsteiners. Their interactions are controlled by the fact that you want to have also, that this is breaking also rotation invariant, if you want. There is a lot here in how to constrain the higher order interaction within these fields. I don't remember how many powers of derivatives you can control, but in sparse meta theory, probably several. People also like to study the behavior of the confining string in the same way, try to guess, to figure out the various terms in the derivative expansion and compare with experiments for the pure Yamil's theory. Fortunately, not for the supersymmetric one, because I don't think you can do Monte Carlo on this. Anyway, back to the domain walls. So there are massless modes, which we don't care about, and then there might be topological degrees of freedom. Now, and the nature of, so this topological, because of the Zn-Zichuan symmetry, you expect this theory only to really depend on the difference between k and k prime, modulo n.
Extension on a two-spatial dimensional.
Well, I'm not sure that all the quasi particles of the theory will be actual particles.
So
some of them might be Wilson loops.
Or it could be line like.
Yeah. See, a Wilson loop in the bulk is going to be confined. If you put the Wilson loop here, you get the confining string.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's known that the confining string can actually end on the domain wall. So in principle, if you bring a Wilson loop to the domain wall, the confining string can detach.
Okay, yeah.
And if I assign, if I time at the end, I give a.
But the energy of the extension is a point like, localized at point, not a string like.
No, that's right. So these are, this has some quasi particles on the domain wall. So, right. So if you just take this picture and rotate it around, you can also. Determine that T of k minus k prime should be the same as T of k prime minus k up to a reflection. So say if this was some left moving Chern Simons, this would behave like just because, you know, you take this picture, you rotate it, you're done, just inverted the direction on the domain wall. Okay. So Vaffa and Acaria have a conjecture about this theory, which is motivated by some brain constructions and by some another argument I'm going to review momentarily. And the conjecture is that this is a Chern-Simons theory, essentially U, K minus K prime, Chern-Simons theory at a specific level. And I would like to sort of explain how do they arrive at this conclusion. So the way to sort of test if there is a chance that this domain wall theory is topological is to put it on a torus and see how many ground states you get. This
means that since you have a gapless set, I wonder whether you can gap the gapless set to make
actually,
it like go away.
Yes.
Put potential to combine the harmonic and the triangle. Also gap the Fermion.
This is actually relatively easy.
So it's really a Gauss set, really goes
away. So there is a way, you can consider configurations or the couplings of the theory very slowly in space in the same direction. For example, you can take the theta angle and have slightly different values on the two sides.
Okay.
This can be done supersymmetrically, preserving the same supersymmetry as the domain wall. And it will make both massive.
So therefore, this topological sector and the gap
yeah. really that's right. You can really focus on the on this sector. Okay. So what happens if I put this system on a torus? And why is it useful at all? So a crucial point is that if I put this three-dimensional domain wall theory on a torus, it becomes the quantum mechanics with two supercharges. And in quantum mechanics, you choose supercharges. There is something very useful called the Witten index. So you take your quantum mechanics, you do the trace of minus one to the Fermion number to the minus beta H on the Hilbert space. Okay. Now, in a supersymmetric quantum mechanics, all the states which are not ground states come in pairs, exchanged by the supercharges. So they actually cancel out in this. All that is left are the ground states, which can be not paired up. So this Zeta index is always an integer, and it's very robust integer. If you do a deformation of your Hamiltonian, your spectrum moves around, but this is not going to change. All can happen is that pairs of ground states get lifted or come down. I mean, as long as the only thing that could make it jump is if you do something so dramatic that some new states really come down suddenly from infinity, or a continuum appears. That's what that could make the Ritten index jump. Otherwise, it's extremely robust. Even if you're, you know, even if the three-dimensional theory had a phase transition, that once you put it on a torus, the transition will be smooth enough that the Ritten index would presumably not change. So we can take this system, put it on a torus, and make the torus very small. Because this theory is asymptotically free. Once the torus is small enough, I can actually use those degrees of freedom to understand what's going on. So what happens if I put the gauge theory in a small torus? Classically, the degrees of freedom are just the connection, on a flat connection, a choice of flat connection on the torus. So this way, people argue that you, at low energy, you're gonna get some sigma model in 1 plus 1 dimensions, whose target is the space of flat connections on the torus, which actually happens to be CP n minus 1. So the claim is that this theory put on the torus should match, at least for supersymmetric quantities, the CP n minus 1 supersymmetric nonlinear sigma model. Nice observation, that theory also has n vacua, which are also labeled by the VEV of the Fermion bilinear. So this works. And also, but in that theory, people was able to compute actually the number of solitons between two vacua. And the claim is that between two vacua, say between 0 and k, there are n choose k solitons. Once you put the theory in a torus on the tissue, so for this two-dimensional theory, there's supposed to be n over k solitons. On the other hand, here the idea is that there is a single domain wall. I put in this domain wall theory on a torus, and I'm getting a very large number of ground states, n choose k. So this suggests that this is some topological theory with n choose k minus k prime states on a torus, on a tissue. And
so this would mean that it's a calculator for the domain wall only. You take the domain wall and a torus topology.
Well, you can put the whole theory with it on a torus. Here you get a nonlinear sigma model, CPN minus 1, in one of the vacua. This is a massive 1 plus 1 dimensional theory. And here you get one of the solitons in this two-dimensional theory.
I didn't expect to have solitons when you increase the volume of this torus.
I expect to still have n the same number of states on the torus, no matter what the volume of the torus.
So you expect them to remain also in the flat
volume? Well, I mean, once it's flat, they're not solitons anymore. So these are, I don't expect it. I don't expect to have n choose k domain walls. I expect to have a single domain wall with a topological theory in it. So that once I put it on a compact space, I get several states. But it has a single vacuum in flat space. Okay. So
Hamiltonian
for
the whole four-dimensional system.
That's right.
And but then there's a concern that when you have a domain wall in this four-dimensional system, mm-hmm. then especially your fixed position domain wall, you break some supersymmetry. So therefore, the Witten index you use is only for the unbroken supersymmetry.
Oh, well, or there are something. So,
concern.
when I'm, as I said, you can make this sort of soliton, so domain walls fixed without breaking supersymmetry.
Okay.
So the way you can define these Zipf techniques in two ways. Either you say, okay, I take these single particle states and I throw away the center of mass degrees of freedom by hand and do the calculation. This can actually be done not by hand, by putting an extra F here, which actually kills the zero moles that you get from the fermions. So either you put an extra F, you use what, or you do this, but you change things a little bit to freeze the soliton in place without breaking supersymmetry.
So you can really fix the main wall without breaking supersymmetry.
That's right.
You can still use this.
That's right.
And so this one actually, although this calculation is for a 40-man system, the result is for the degeneracy for the domain wall.
That's right.
That's how it
it's important, right, that the theory is completely massive away from the domain wall.
Supersymmetry is violated because anticommutator is equal to momentum.
Yes, half of the supersymmetry is violated. So I start with 4 and now I have 2.
Ah, so when you say that you don't break supersymmetry, you mean you don't break some parts of
it? I still have the same 2. Those 2 are enough to do with an index.
You mean small group?
So if I make this, the gauge couplings vary in this direction, I'm also breaking the same transition symmetry that the domain wall is breaking, so I'm not doing anything new. And I can preserve the same supersymmetries which the domain wall was preserving, which are the minimum number in 3 dimensions, 2 supercharges.
So there's a two-related question. One is that that's possible to assume the domain wall to have a spherical topology. Then the same calculation should not give you any degeneracy. Or if the domain wall have a heterogeneous tools topology or other heterogeneous, they may find a topology dependent degeneracy. All those calculations are doable.
This calculation might be possible, but people realized it only very recently. So it was typically expected that you, well, okay, how do I say this? So it's possible to put the four-dimensional theory indeed on S3 times R by adding, well, I'm not sure. It would usually requires a background for the R symmetry, which is broken, so maybe not.
No, what I'm trying to say is that the four-dimensional space can have any topology one, but we just make a two-dimensional domain wall.
So you can surely do it, but I don't think it's possible to preserve enough supersymmetry to do a task-40 calculation.
Okay, I see. So in this particular choice, the degeneracy are exact by supersymmetry.
Mm-hmm.
But in general case, you make a small splitting, which is still topological, but it's not
like you can do the calculation, say, for a small sphere or small Riemann surface, but there is no way to understand to connect it, what's going to happen when the sphere becomes large.
Okay.
There's surely going to be, because you go through a phase transition and the confinement, confinement phase transition. So unless it's something very robust, as much as you can do. Okay. So yes, we only have very scarce information about this theory. So as I said, there is a string theory way to engineer this theory out of brains. But unfortunately, there is a certain parameter in the game. And the string theory picture is reliable when the parameter is very far away from the field theory setup. So that the string theory was used to identify which topological theory this is. And you might worry that this might jump as you change the parameter. But, you know, I assume that that's not the case. And that this is indeed supersymmetric Chern-Simons theory. U k minus k prime at level n. This is the conjecture of Vafa and Akari and Vafa. So what do I mean with supersymmetric Chern-Simons theorem? So as I said, it's not clear what supersymmetry really tells me for a topological field theory. I can give 2 ways to, so if you take the Chern-Simons Lagrangian, and you supersymmetrize it, you do it by adding an extra real fermion and in a sort of eta squared mass term for it. So if you're thinking about this as a law, if you're trying to regularize this theory by a Yamil's term, then what you have would be Yamil's theory with trans-Simons coupling plus a massive fermion. And integrated with the massive fermion actually changes the trans-Simons level a bit. So a way to understand this theory is that it's a standard trans-Simons theory. Let me just set k prime equal to 0. Okay? Uk at level m minus k plus some fermionic quasi-particle, which sort of goes along for the ride. Another way that to understand this theory that I find useful is that, so a bosonic trans-Simons theory is a theory which is naturally has a WCW model at the boundary as an edge state. This one is a theory which has an edge state supersymmetric WCW theory. So supersymmetric WCW theory is a theory of, you know, which has some Gasmuldi algebra, some dimension one currents in the joint of SUN, of U, sorry, UK in this case, together with a bunch of fermions, three fermions also in the joint of UK. So this is the supersymmetric WCW model. Okay, so this is the what was known. Sorry, it took so long to present it. But so this theory, there is this theory. It has n vacua, has domain walls between vacua, and it has some topological theory supported on the domain walls. And by the way, I should remind you of this important relation. Let me just remove k prime. So this is actually compatible with this, because this is the level rank duality of trans-Simons theory. So, and let me explain this level rank duality a bit better from the point of view of the WCW models. So, as I said, the supersymmetric WCW model, let me just say, put a little S to remember it's supersymmetric, a level N, is the same as a UK at level M minus K bosonic WCW model, plus this fermions in the joint, which contributes another K to the level. So the total currents of the supersymmetric WCW model are the bosonic currents plus something like some fermion bilinear. That's the currents built out of the fermions. So these currents have level k, these currents have level m minus k, and together they make a supersymmetric WCW level n. In particular, if you decide to look at a supersymmetric WCW un at level n, this is only the fermions. This is a theory with n square fermions. And in particular, it's a pretty trivial theory. I mean, it's an edge state for an almost trivial theory.
But for the time we found it, you should have this non-sigma field. What is this field? I mean, there's a field which
well,
some non-sigma whether.
Here I never put an edge, right? So you cannot end this domain wall.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's supposed to live in between two vacua, so you cannot cut it. But what I want to study, it's something which is almost as good as cutting it, which is to study junctions of domain walls.
Okay.
So if you have three vacua, you can have domain wall between these two, domain between these two, domain between these two, coming together. Now you can ask what lives here. So that's the purpose of this talk, to describe what lives at the junction of domain walls. But so just to go back to the level rank duality, So I said, this is a pretty trivial theory. Now you can start doing interesting cosets. For example, you can do un at level n over uk at level n times un minus k at level n. Okay. So this means. Mm-hmm.
Dimensional theory on the domain. Mm-hmm. In this case, of k equal to n, there's no domain
for k equal to n. I'm describing something that leaves. I'm just talking about the Chersamus theory, uk at level n. I'm not trying to describe a boundary of this domain. It was because this domain has no boundaries. Anyway, I'm just trying to explain level rank duality for the Chersamus theory and how it manifests itself for edge states of the. For the Chersamus theory.
Chersamus theory as W, the W are different.
Sure, I understand. So the Chersamus theory has the property of level rank duality, which means that for the bosonic case, uk at level m minus k is the same as u m minus k at level k up to orientation reversal. This is the property of Chersamus theory. I'm just trying to explain some fact about WCW models, supersymmetric WCW models, which is related to this level rank duality.
But may I also ask, what is the meaning of this notation, uk and n minus k? What is the meaning of the notation uk and n minus k?
UK Chersamus theory at level n minus k. This is the coefficient in front of the Chersamus action. In most cases.
Okay.
If you look at this coset, you look at that central charge of this coset, you find it has central charge zero. If you look at it a bit more carefully, you find it is actually completely trivial. So you see, this is a trivial theory which can live at the boundary of the product of these two Chersamus theories, supersymmetric Chersamus theories. So the fact that, or another way, it really encodes the fact that, you know, the labels that label primaries of these and labels that label primaries of these are dual to each other. So each, anyway. Another way to state this fact is that if you take the coset un at level n over uk at level n, you get m minus k level n, you get uk at level n. So another way to understand this is that you can use this as an edge state for your supersymmetric Chersamus theory. Either this or this here. Okay.
Here you say that on the main world you may have a Chersamus theory.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to say, maybe from here, try to explain what kind of Chersamus theory it is, or whether there's some guess what kind of Chersamus theory.
Well, I'm just saying, you see, if I tell you this, you might worry that, you know, if I look at the, where is the clock?
It's
here.
It's SUK level and supersymmetric kind of theory.
Right, so if I look at this as domain between 0 and 1, 2, 3,
yeah, okay.
In the SU7 theory, you would say that this is a U3 theory at level 7.
Okay.
On the other hand, if I look at it as a domain between these and these,
okay.
I would say, oh, wait, no. Kuhn would say, Buffer is saying, okay, and Buffer is saying, no, wait, it's like U4 at level 7.
Oh,
so you have two answers. Which one is the right one? But they're both right because these two theories are level rank, are dual to each other.
So it's the SUK level
7. Yes. See, something I myself found confusing for quite a while is that these two theories, in a sense, have different central charge for the edge states, right? So, okay, there is Leverank duality in the sense that the quasi-particles interact in the same way. But if you define these theories from some Lagrangian, you literally from Jan-Milton, Simons, Lagrangian, you look at what's the gravitational anomaly, you find a different answer. So there is sort of these theories, in a sense, differ by something completely abelian, something.
It's bigger than another thing.
But because, you know, because I'm trying to put this theory on a domain wall, I'm anyway free to I mean, there is an intrinsic ambiguity here, because I could redefine the what's going on in the bulk here by adding, say, an integral of R with R. Okay. Let's shift the gravitational Jean-Simons coupling here and modify what the central charge of your edge states are. So,
maybe there's a related issue about how much you can determine for the effect theorem on the domain wall.
Yes.
Because from here, say, the property of a domain wall determined by the two bulk phase.
Yes.
But the hardware may not be determined uniquely. So maybe they up to something. So what I'm trying to say is that maybe they up to this difference.
There are questions that you could ask for a purely three-dimensional theory, which might distinguish maybe those two, but there are not questions that you can ask about this domain wall. So, so you cannot end this domain wall.
But my question is following: suppose you create a domain wall in a different way, and maybe this different way to create a domain wall, which makes slightly different.
No, I think that there is a unique supersymmetric domain wall here. However you define it, I mean, you don't define it, see, it's not your choice. You had your Revit here. That's it. Has this vacuum, has this domain wall. There's a unique supersymmetric domain wall, that's the end. But because it's a domain wall, there are just some questions that are harder to ask.
But my real question is following. This Jean-Simons theorem appears to be that it has to be on the domain wall.
Yes.
They cannot appear alone. And the ambiguity you can add, that always something you can define alone on the 2+1 dimensional manifold. But this, there's some nature of this transdimensional theory, which has to be on the domain wall of these two, that determined by these two bulk phase.
Yeah, I mean,
and so that
I would say if these theories are not living on the domain wall, I might think of ways to distinguish them.
Okay.
But because they're on the domain wall, I really don't see a way I could distinguish them. So this Leverank duality appears to be really an equivalence.
But my question really following. Then, you know, usually in this transdimensional theory, you have these topological extensions.
Yes.
And but then there's a little bit tricky thing about if those theories only appear on the domain wall, you may have some more topological extension than it is allowed by the transdimensional theory, which can be defined alone in the 2+1 dimensional.
Well, the Bulk theory is pretty trivial, let's remind. So this is not a topological theory in the bulk.
Oh, I see. That's a question. Yeah.
It's pretty trivial, but
okay.
So all ambiguity you can have is something that can be associated to some local counter term in the bulk, but that's all.
Okay.
In the first construction,
yes,
the domain words come always in pair, right? to k prime and k prime to k because of the periodicity.
No, I put it on a true torus, and this is a three-dimensional.
Okay, so
I can, if I put this theory on a true torus, I have a 1+1 flat directions and a true torus. In 1+1, I have a one-dimensional space. I can have k on one side and k prime on the other.
Yeah. The question is, under this reflection,
yes,
these two domains were kind of you have to flip both.
Yes.
So that means this level length duality applies only to this double transdimensions, not individually.
Mm-hmm. It maps a transdimensions to another transdimensions.
Yeah. The full theory has two transdimensions localized.
No, they are the same. So you see, if I have a domain wall. If I take this domain wall, I rotate this picture, and I rotate blackboard, it becomes the other. I mean, it's the same object. Just look at it like that, or look at it like that. So whatever you find on the volume must be the same up to reflection. And I'm claiming these two theories as both volume theories are indeed the same after reflection. So this equals this bar. Okay. Now, junctions. So it's just the fact that if you look at the supersymmetries preserved by domain walls in this theory for supercharges, it's often possible to find some nice supersymmetric interfaces between them. Now, a nice way to understand this. So, as I said, this domain wall has a tension which can be written as the absolute value of Sk minus Sk prime. These are two complex numbers. This domain wall has a tension which can be written as Sk prime minus Sk double prime. And this one is the tension that is Sk double prime minus Sk. There's an obvious way to make equilibrium here. You can just say, OK, I pick the direction of the domain wall to coincide with the phase of this complex number so that my tension as a vector is literally this. So the three tensions add to zero. And it just happens this configuration is also supersymmetric. So as long as your domain walls have a slope in the plane, which is controlled by the phase of this number, this complex number, then the whole configuration preserves one supercharge, one common supercharge. So we went from 4 to 2 in three dimensions to 1. So here, at this junction, I must find such a 1+1 dimensional system with one supercharge, and it lives at the boundary of some Chern-Simons theories. I just representing the tension of the domain wall as a force. You know, the junction is subject to some force.
I don't want to say that the domain wall has some selected direction.
Yeah, so that I'd say if you want to preserve supersymmetry, which guarantees also mechanical stability of the system, your domain walls must point in a very specific direction, which coincides with the direction of the complex number associated to it. So let me give an example. In an SU 3-gauge theory in 4 dimensions, I have 3 vacua forming an equilateral triangle in a complex plane. The wave of the Gicino condensate forms a triangle in the complex plane. There are 3 domain walls. And there is a supersymmetric configuration where they form equal angles. Yes.
And domain wall are in just coordinate space.
Mm-hmm. So the way this happens is that we are trying to preserve specific one supercharge out of those 4. Each of the domain walls preserve 2. And we're looking for some common intersection of these. So the preserved supercharge, So very roughly, the supercharge preserved by a domain wall is the linear combination of 2 charges which have opposite spin. And there is a relative coefficient which depends on the arc, on the phase of S. Uh, So this is the supersymmetry preserved by this domain, by domain wall. Now, if you want this to conserve the supersymmetry preserved by another domain wall, so this is preserved by domain wall, which is, say, straight. Now, if you try to figure out what the supersymmetry is preserved by domain wall, which is a slope, you just conjugate this with some Lorentz transformation, some rotation. These have opposite spin. So you end up putting something like an e to the I phi relative coefficient. Now you want all of these domain walls to have the same supercharge. So you want to tie together the rotation and the phase of the central charge. I can explain more, but maybe after the talk. So the point is, here I have some, whatever lives at this intersection must be an interesting 1+1 super conformal field theory, because it is the edge state for this product of Chern-Simons theories. And so my conjecture is that so if a bunch of these domain walls which support U, K1, level N, symmetric U, K2 at level N, and so on, the theory that lives at the junction is going to be the following coset. Un at level N over the product of UK I at level N. I would like to argue, give a couple arguments in support of this, conjecture. Non-zero. Yes. So this definitely has an interesting central charge. It's a supersymmetric chiral CFD.
But only have a two, then it joins and have
a zero. That's right, of course. So the first consistency check, if there are only two walls, you get something trivial as it should. Also, see, suppose that I, you know, I was working for some in some large N, right? So I had just, I was just studying the domain was between trio de Vacker, which are close to each other. So I would have two domain walls, each supporting a U1 at level N, and these are supporting U2 at level N. Well, I mean, it's not difficult to guess something natural to put here. You can just do U2 over U1 times U1. That is somehow, you might have said, okay, no, I prefer to have just the product of edge states for these three guys. Problem is that because of the orientation, I want one supersymmetry in the system. And this is actually is a chiral supercharge. So I would like to have some supersymmetric chiral degrees of freedom to put here. But see, if I have something chiral for my U2 theory, I would end up with something anti-chiral for the U1 theory. If I was trying to do something just multiplying the edge states, I would end up with something like U2 level N times U1 bar, level N times U1 bar. This would have been pretty ugly. This guy would have had supersymmetries which had the wrong chirality. And somehow it doesn't look like the minimal thing to do. I want something that has the smallest possible central charge. Because I'm trying to have a pretty generic situation. The smallest central charge compatible with the supersymmetry. So it would be very, very natural to just consider this as a candidate. You know, you can repeat the argument when you have points that are a bit farther away in this big circle. But then when your point gets far enough, you start worrying, wait, this answer doesn't look symmetric at all between the three legs. Right? If I have a U K1 plus K2 at level N here, UK1 at level n here, uk2 at level n. You can surely propose that this is uk1 plus k2 n over uk1 level n times uk2 at level n. But I should be able to also look at this picture like that. Replace this guy with n minus k1. But luckily, there is Levitan duality, so I can actually rewrite this coset. This way. And now it's perfectly symmetric among the three legs, between the three legs. Now there is something else fun that happens, which in principle was not obvious that it would happen. But I think it's worth mentioning. Okay. Sorry?
25 minutes.
Ah, I have so much time.
Okay, minus the 11:30.
Okay. I thought it was 1 hour, not 1.5.
Well, it's a group meeting.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll have half an hour of questions. That's fine. Now, actually, there is something I can say if you guys have patience after this. But anyway, so suppose I look at the four domain walls coming together. Might have them come together at the same point. Then we'll say, okay, this is un at level n over uk1 times uk2 times uk3 times uk4. Now, how does this compare with the situation where I actually split the junction? So this configuration is perfectly possible. It actually preserves still the same supersymmetry. It's a web of junctions. Now here I find two separate CFTs, conjecturally un at level n over uk1 uk2 un minus k1 minus k2. And here I find un n over u of k4, k3, u of k4, u of n minus k3 minus k4, which is actually k1 plus k2. Maybe I should have mentioned this because of the relation between the slopes and the these complex numbers. Every domain, if you every junction corresponds to a set of domain walls which form some polygon in here. In particular, they always add up to n. Anyway, so I can use the Levitan duality here to rewrite this. This way. So I just choose the product of these two CFTs, but they are coupled by a three-dimensional topological theory in between. What does this mean? It means that if I take a primary here, this primary will have three labels, one that lives here, one that lives here, and then one that lives here. Then I take this a primary in this CFT. It also has three labels. Actually, four labels, sorry. A3, A4, and A1 plus 2. Well, and then there is this label, but this is trivial because there's only one primary. But the fact that these are coupled to topological theory means that whenever you have this operator here, it must be accompanied by a quasi-particle attached to it of type A1 plus 2. And then this quasi-particle must end at the location of this other operator. So you see, the system only allows it to use, has some sort of non-local constraint due to this topological theory in between, which only allows you to use operators in the two theories which have the same label. But if you look at this theory, the primaries of this theory, well, sort of you can sort of try to just do this operation, and you get this theory. What this really means is that this theory, the primaries of this theory can be decomposed as sums of primaries of these two theories with the same label. These two theories are really the same once you couple them to the topological theory in between. So if you take this product as your theory and you couple them by a UK1 plus K2 transform on level n, you get back to this theory effectively. Not really, because in this setup, these operators are still free to have different positions. But you can see that things are sort of quite smooth as you shrink this intermediate leg and you go back to this configuration. So somehow, maybe because of the supersymmetry of the system, there is a very favorable situation where you can resolve these intersections and put them back or bring them together and open them up in the other direction. And everything happens quite smoothly, which I would take as supporting the idea that this is the correct picture for the intersections.
Are the tensions of the branches correct?
I think the tension has to do with this area.
Yeah.
So they just stuck together. In particular, right, there is no force, there is no attraction between the two because of supersymmetry. Even when the junction is very close, there is no attraction between these two junctions, which allows this phenomenon to allow you to go from here to here in a completely smooth way without some phase transition. So I would guess in a supersymmetric setup, you would not be that lucky. And actually, even in a supersymmetric setup, I can imagine a situation where you would not be this lucky. For example, if some of these quasi-particles, if you had two operators small dimensions connected by a quasi-particle, which is actually a particle, a massive particle of your theory, when you integrate away that massive particle, you're going to end up adding this to your Lagrangian and deforming the theory, at least when the junctions get close. So I don't think this is a general feature, but it seems to happen here, probably because there are no actual particles which match the quasi-particles of the topological theory.
The mass of the quasi-particle to be small,
zero. No, mass of the quasi-particles will have nothing to do. I mean, you see, in the topological theory, the quasi-particles are just line defects, okay?
Yeah.
They're not dynamical things. In the actual physical theory, there will be massive glue balls that are stuck to your domain wall, and they might carry some interesting topological quantum numbers, but it's not clear that all the quasi-particles are realized that way. So here there is a nice, pretty consistent picture. And this is what I know with relative confidence. There are a lot of questions which I would like to know the answer to, and I don't know how to answer at the moment. The question that this four-dimensional theory has a lot of possible boundary conditions. I could put an actual physical boundary in my four-dimensional theory. Okay. Then, when I go to low energy, in a specific vacuum, I might ask what lives on the boundary. I might ask, okay, if I choose vacua and the domain wall ending on the boundary, what lives at the junction within the domain wall and the boundary? So these are questions that I feel they should also be answerable, but they're proving to be trickier. Yes. It's pretty easy in a gauge theory. You can put Dirichlet boundary conditions or Neumann boundary conditions, and all of these boundary conditions can be supersymmetrized in a natural way. So I think there is a lot of possible fun in these configurations. But if I take a boundary condition in this four-dimensional theory and I put it on the torus, I can actually compute the number of ground states for the system using, again, this CPN minus one sigma model. And you find, again, gazillion ground states. Big binomials of ground states. So it seems to be likely that there are interesting topological field theories living on these boundaries once you go to the infrared. But somehow I've not been able to find some nice nice interlocking set of theories with which allow me to construct nice candidates for the junctions. And I don't know why. I must be missing something. But this is what I'm trying to do at the moment with this system.
There's an issue about whether you can actually make this boundary while preserving all these properties of the Fox theory.
There's
a concern about the anomalous, whether this to really put this Fox field theory in a well-defined regulated way.
Yes.
On the one hand, preserve all these properties. That's a
right. Well, for example, you will surely break this situation.
Okay.
Because boundary condition for the fermions always takes half of the fermions and set them to zero. But that's not a problem. The bulk theory will still have its vacuum. It just means that the theory that lives between on the boundary in the presence of vacuum K will depend on K. Well, that's fine. I don't think you can have other bad anomalies. You can even do things like Dirichlet boundary conditions where there is no gauge symmetry in the boundary. So you don't even have to worry about that.
Yeah. Is there a central charge in this symmetry algebra of the one plus one theory, which is a possible potential?
Yes, for the domain walls.
So you can identify.
Even in the four dimensions, we have central charge associated with the domain walls, which tells you that they have attention. So another question which is fun is replacing a SUN with some quotient like PSUN or quotients, other intermediate quotient by some other subgroup of the center. Because then it's actually known that, for example, if you take the PSU2 theory, SO3 theory, that's the theory with two vacua, and it's known to have a Z2 gauge theory in one of the two vacua. So now the domain walls between the two vacua will be things that live at the boundary of a topological for the 3+1 dimensional field theory. So there might be some interesting effects there. Also, maybe I can mention something else. So there's a nice, so the whole project was actually born from listening to a talk by Fisher on this work they did with Metlitsky and somebody else, on the situation where you have a four-dimensional gauge theory with an interface. You condense dions with different charges on the two sides of the interface. Indeed, a way to get this n equal one Yamil's theories, you start with a theory that has even more supercharge, which is solvable, and then give a mass to some fermions to make it less supersymmetric. So there is a description of the situation which you to go to one of the Chovakian SU2, for example, you would condense a monopole. And to go to the other vacuum, you would condense a dion of electric charge 2. Now, suppose you have an interface, you condense a monopole on one side and a dion on the other side. What's going to happen? So here you know that an electrically charged particle cannot survive because it's not local with the condensate. And it cannot survive here. But if you put an electrically charged particle here, you can imagine adding a bit of condensate here and a bit of condensate here. Say half a unit of this minus half a unit of this and screen it. I mean, not completely screen, sorry. And make it not confined. So electrically charged particles of charge 1 can survive at this interface. On the other hand, if they're charge 2, they can be completely screened by an actual monopole, an actual dion. And because of this extra condensate you put, this particle carry an extra magnetic flux. So you end up with electrically charged particles with a flux attached to them. And that's how you end up with a U1 just sum as a level 2. So this is the intuitive reason for which you get topological theories on these boundaries. But I have to say, I don't have a nice description which would explain for you the full U non-abelian theories. I just wanted to mention it as a...
I wonder whether you can understand the result in the following way. When you have different when the average S is different, you have different vacuum. Mm-hmm. That's correspond to, I wonder whether this is theta F wedge F term. The theta may have different value. So therefore, when I have a boundary between two states where on the two sides theta F are different, then you have to have some change dimensions in the domain world. Whether there's not such a way to understand this.
Yeah, it makes
sense. So the level, basically the level you have, I don't know, is if you do level rank duality, so SUN level K, then this K is like given by the different value of the theta on the two sides of the domain one.
Except that the level is always order N.
But can you do the level rank duality just simply say SUN level K, then you say this K is because different theta.
Yeah, but somehow it does not seem to be working like that. But on the other hand, it does feel like this gauge field must have something to do with the original gauge field.
Yeah.
For example, if you look at this, you know, ignore the levels, okay? If you look at this, where is it? If you look at this, what is this object, okay? Suppose that, for example, you had a very large level, I guess. Well, just imagine that this coset was really just literally a sigma model in this coset space. This is pretty much the different number of ways to break a UN into a bunch of UKs. Or if you look at this, it feels like, okay, I had a U2 here, which has been broken into two U1s, and this is just parameterizes the number of ways you can do that. So in some sense, it feels like on this domain, well, some part of the gauge group is unconfined. And this part matches when you have a junction. Also, if you look at the, the selection rules for this coset. So you ask yourself which quasi-particles of these theories can come together at an operator at a junction. Also, things remind you of the way a Wilson loop was split into other Wilson loops of some other representation. So for example, in this case, the elementary quasi-particle can go through here or go through here. But these are just hints. I don't know if these are, I would like to believe that this gives you some hints about something interesting that is happening in confinement, but it will take more work to excavate it out.
Yeah, another point is that since this theory is chiral, you can consider a variation of the theory. It's a non-chiral one. You have this sector and the mirror sector together.
Yes.
And I think this non-chiral version of this surely can be put on a lattice.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's their boundary should surely be able to
yes.
I wonder what that may give some hint. I mean, we have this non-chiral version, then whether
honestly,
we no question how to define
even without fermions, even just pure Hilbert theory in the presence of boundary, I think it's an interesting system. So I suppose that's a question. Take pure Hilbert theory, put Dirichlet on the conditions, what happens?
Okay.
You know, the theory, in the ultraviolet, you have actually a flavor symmetry on the boundary, because the gauge group is eliminated there. It seems to become a Fibonacci symmetry. You can have an F mean U by itself.
Okay.
What happens in infrared? Does it get spontaneously broken? Is it carried by some blue box? What happens?
Yeah.
And yes, in the supersymmetric case, then you could, or with fermions, you can start having.
So this sounds like a little bit like if you found this problem, so if you ignore the fermion.
Yeah.
And I wonder, maybe, could if you ignore the fermion, and then the then is let's assume this SUN is confined.
Yes.
Then you at the line get some confined SUN theory.
Yes.
Then there's the issue about what is confined phase have a have unbroken gauge symmetry, you know, not the equivalent for some kind of say Zn gauge theory.
Mm. Yes.
And if the answer is yes, then whether this Zn gauge theory get twisted or not. You have to be
fixed.
But
if you look at the SO3 case,
yeah,
where indeed one of the Chuvakia has the Chugach theory, then you can ask what happens if I give a mass to the fermion to go to the pure SUN. Now, only one of the Chuvakia will survive once you break supersymmetry. But I think it's conjectured which one of the two actually depends on the choice of theta angle. So it may be possible that for some choice of the theta angle in the for the in the non-supersymmetric theory, you do get a Z2-gauge theory. And if you sit just at the critical value of the theta angle, where there is a first order phase transition between the two vacua, you might even be able to get the domain wall and ask if it's topological.
Okay.